this program to give you a bulletin just received from one of our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This is H.B. Kaltenborn speaking. Here in the nation's capital, there is anxiety and concern, but no outward sign of panic.
And good evening. My name is Don Ecker. You're listening to the Cable Radio Network, and this is UFOs Tonight. Well, before we get into tonight's program, a number of weeks ago I asked all of you folks to send in postcards and tell us how you felt about us possibly moving from Sunday evening to Saturday night. Well, the response was definitely overwhelming. About 98% of all of you requested that we stay on Sunday night, so that's what we're going to do. And I also told you that if you sent in a postcard to let us know how you felt about that, I was going to have a drawing when we announced what night we were going to be staying on, and I have three winners here. And I'd like to thank first all of you for sending in the cards and letting me know how you felt. The first winner, and you're going to be having some really good stuff sent out to you this week, some t-shirts and some statues from Dreamland FX, one of our great sponsors. My first winner is Gareth and Karen Davies in Monterey Park. Congratulations, Gareth and Karen. My second winner tonight is Edwin Hoffmeister in Rolla, Missouri. We have listeners all the way out in Missouri. And my last winner is from the large state of Texas, a gentleman by the name of Bill Rawls, who lives in Grand Prairie, Texas. So you guys keep your eyes on your mailbox instead of the sky for a little bit, and you're going to be having some goodies coming in. And tonight's show is being brought to you by UFO Magazine, the magazine that everybody else is running to catch up to. UFO Magazine is a forum on extraordinary theories and phenomena, and I have the pleasure of being the director of research. And as a matter of fact, just this last couple of days, we've been putting the new issue to bed. It's going to be going off to press in the next day or two, and I think you're going to find this new issue fantastic. There's really some fascinating reading in there. And I wanted to let you know that not only is UFO Magazine available for a year subscription for a mere $21, but right now, because we just recently found a large stock of back issues, we are offering all the back issues of UFO Magazine. That's every one except six that are presently in reprint. That's 30 issues for the small price of $45. That's right, you didn't mishear me. $45 for the last 30 issues of UFO Magazine. We have a large stock, and we want to get that out of there. So look, if you just found out about UFO Magazine or UFOs Tonight, by all means, take this information down if you have your pencil and pen ready, and I'll be giving it to you again. Put on a letter, special back order issue, address it to UFO Magazine, P.O. Box 1053, Sunland, California, 91041, California residents add 8 1/4% sales tax. And we will ship you out the last 30 issues, and you're going to know what's been happening in this crazy world of UFO research. Well, tonight's show is going to be perhaps just a little bit different. You know, in the UFO research arena, one way that somebody or many people have, for one reason or another, been targeted by other people within the research field or people that just plain don't like them. They've been accused of being disinformation agents of the secret government or working for one of the intelligence agencies. Now, why is that considered a real slam in UFO research? Well, perhaps because one of the reasons that most people are trying to find out is what has been happening in the last 50 years is because the people that should know, the people that are responsible for our nation's security, the United States government and the intelligence services and military services of the U.S. government have not been forthcoming with the information that they, in fact, do know about the UFO subject. And not only have they not been forthcoming, but for many, many years, representatives of our government have been telling the American people there is no secret as far as UFOs are concerned. Well, the first thing we have to ask ourselves, would our government tell us untruths? Well, anybody that's been around for the last 25 years and have been looking at current events like the Vietnam War, Watergate, the Church Committee hearings on the Central Intelligence Agency, things like the Iran-Contra scandal, the BCCI bank scandal, the Inslaw computer theft, would know that sometimes we are not told the truth. As a matter of fact, there are a lot of people out there that don't believe much of anything that come from our elected representatives. Well, when it comes to speaking about UFOs, of course, we automatically are consigned to a fringe area. But we have to ask ourselves, do our intelligence services and do our military services find this field of endeavor interesting? Well, of course, they do. As a matter of fact, any unconventional belief system would rate scrutiny from our government, because the first and primary thing that any government has in its agenda or order of business is maintaining itself in power. And sometimes unconventional belief systems are considered a threat to that. Well, tonight's guest that I have this evening is a gentleman that's been involved in UFO research for about 25 years. His name is Bruce McAbee, Dr. Bruce McAbee, who holds a PhD in physics. He's been working in optics and thermal dynamics since he graduated from American University in 1970. Dr. McAbee was a member of NICAP. He was a member of the Washington Area Subcommittee of NICAP, and he's been a consultant and a photo analyst for the Mutual UFO Network, and is presently the state director for the state of Maryland for MUFON. Dr. McAbee also works in the Navy Laboratory. And the reason that Dr. McAbee is going to be on this evening, about 3 weeks ago, throughout the UFO research arena, there was a letter that was circulated from a group calling itself the Associated Investigators Group. And the letter that was sent out was called the Associated Investigators Report. And not only does this letter involve Dr. McAbee, but also the Fund for UFO Research, the Central Intelligence Agency, and a number of people that at one time or another or still work in Central Intelligence. And the crux of the letter alleged that Dr. McAbee had been a secret agent or someone that has been working in connection with the CIA, taking a covert look at the UFO field since 1979. Well, Dr. McAbee granted UFO Magazine an exclusive interview a week past to answer some of these charges and to confirm some charges made in here. One of the things that he confirmed was that, yes, since 1979, he has briefed the Central Intelligence Agency on the UFO field on several occasions. And we're going to be talking about some of that and the other charges in this letter. And I now bring you Dr. Bruce McAbee from Maryland. Good evening, Bruce. Are you there? Well, he was there. Let me try it again. Bruce? Okay, I'm going to put it on hold here. We'll see what the problem is with our board, but we do have him on here. And if you folks during the course of this program would like to contact us here at the Cable Radio Network and speak to either my guest or myself, and you live in the 818-213 or 310 area code, and let me go back here and see if we have Bruce on there. Bruce, are you there? Evidently not. I think we got disconnected. Well, while we're getting Bruce back on the line here, and Darren, do you have it? Okay. Hello? Nope, still not there. While we get him back on the line, I'd like to hear what you folks have to say. First, we're going to take a commercial, and when we come back, hopefully we're going to have our guests back on the line and get on with the show. We are back, and I have Dr. Bruce McAbee on the phone. Good evening, Bruce.
Good evening.
Did you were you able to hear any of that before any of the introduction before we got disconnected?
Yeah, I could hear everything up to the point where you tried to introduce me, at which point I heard a click.
We had a problem there. Okay, Bruce, I guess the first thing we want to do, now you had sent me out a point-by-point letter that was taking a very close scrutiny at this Associated Investigators report. I guess the first thing we have to ask is, did you, in fact, over the years, on a number of occasions, brief CIA?
It would be more correct to say that I presented some lectures there. Briefing sounds a bit too formal. But we should be specific on what's true and what's untrue in the letter. First of all, my first talk at the CIA was in 1979. As a result of the New Zealand sighting. And I presume that 99% of your listeners haven't read the AIR report, which I've labeled the hot AIR report. So we have to sort of summarize the various portions of that that you want to discuss. But in that report, it states that quite correctly, that after the New Zealand sightings in 1979, I investigated 1979, that I did indeed discuss the case at CIA headquarters. The AIR report implies that I had actively sought out the CIA to talk to them, which is incorrect. Talking to the CIA would have been the furthest thing from my mind. The AIR report says that I put out feelers through companies to find out who might be able to connect me up with the CIA, which is kind of stupid. If I'd want to contact the CIA, I could have done it directly. But there was no thought in my mind of talking to the CIA.
Well, actually,
what really happened is this. I came back from Australia and New Zealand, where I carried out the major part of the investigation, and I started consulting with a number of people as I traveled across the United States to get back to the Washington, D.C. area. When back in Washington, D.C., I mentioned to Jack Acuff, who was the head of NICAP at the time, that I would be interested in talking to any radar experts. And by a quirk of fate, he happened to know of a guy by the name of Gordon McDonald, who was a chief scientist at MITRE Corporation in McLean, Virginia at the time. And he said, well, he contacted McDonald. He did. And Gordon McDonald invited me to go and talk at MITRE, which I did, him and two other scientists there for 3 or 4 hours, and they seemed to agree with what I was saying in terms of my radar analysis of the New Zealand sighting. And a few days later, I got a call from, I don't know whether I got heard first from Gordon or from another man that I had never met. In any event, it turned out that he had contacted some people at the CIA who knew about radar, and they went ahead and contacted me and invited me to come over and talk to them. And I was a little bit leery of that. After all, the CIA was the bad guys. In fact, it was only 3 months earlier, in December of 78, that they had been forced to cough up about 900 pages of stuff as a result of the CIA lawsuit, which started in 77 and went through 78, culminating in this release that made considerable press interest. Nobody, CIA up to that point, had said they didn't have anything to speak of. A few pages related to things that happened in 1953.
Well, when you went over there in 79, basically you were hoping to meet some people that had an expertise in radar to take a look at the data that you had collected.
What I wanted to do was what I had done previously to various people. I presented the information and go over the New Zealand sighting history and then my analysis of the radar aspects and get their comments on what they thought was happening, because there's a big controversy over whether these were so-called radar angels, which are radar returns, that is, signatures that appear on a radar set due to atmospheric effects or actual solid craft out there. So I talked to this group of people. I didn't know who they were. And got some comment, some feedback. And then one of the guys mentioned in the AIR report invited me back for another more general discussion of the situation of UFO field. And a week or so later, I went back and we talked, I guess, about general ufology. There were two other guys there, people who basically had an interest in the subject. I might point out that virtually every government laboratory and non-government laboratory in the United States, probably elsewhere, have people who are interested in UFOs. Whether they are actively involved or not, they may be interested from a skeptical point of view or a question or an open-minded point of view, or perhaps they're even in favor of UFOs.
What was the level of interest in the people that you talked to over at CIA?
Well,
Was it more or less casual,
although I think they may have been intrigued from the point of view of an interesting test of their abilities to explain things.
Well, what aspect of the phenomenon seemed most important to them?
Well, I can't recall now. I was over there primarily to discuss the radar aspects. I talked about all of it. They didn't seem to be picking on any particular thing. One guy talked about the psychology of the people involved. Somebody else brought up the possibility there was a tape recording made on board the airplane. Somebody said, well, you know, could you have the tape recording analyzed, I guess with a voice stress analyzer? Another person said, well, perhaps they were probably under stress anyway, so that wouldn't prove anything.
Was that about the same time as the Frederick Valentech disappearance?
Valentech disappeared in October of 1978. And that, by the way, may be the subject of an upcoming Unsolved Mystery show. At any rate, Valentech disappeared in October of 78. That made history around the world. That was reported all over the place. And you may recall from that case that Valentech was in contact with the air traffic controller at Melbourne, Australia at the time, and he just started describing this strange object that was flying near him. And the last statement, the air traffic controller asked him to identify the aircraft, and he said something like, it's not an aircraft, it's a... And then there was a crunching noise and nothing. And they never found anything. He was flying out over the Bass Strait south of Melbourne, which is a deep body of water, but they never found any evidence of wreckage. So that sort of had sensitized the Australian and New Zealand community down there. And when these sightings occurred off the coast of New Zealand in December, everybody was running around in circles, running out, wondering what was going on. And that was the case that I investigated occurred in December.
Okay, Bruce.
1978, and was transmitted worldwide. So it was everybody who had heard about. Well, almost everybody had heard about it.
We're going to have to take a very short break. Just one moment, please. And when we come back, more of my guest, Dr. Bruce Maccabee. And if you would like to speak to Dr. Maccabee or myself, and you're in the 818-213 or 310 area codes, you can go back to my guest, Dr. Bruce Maccabee. And Bruce, we also have a call in from Ray in Vermont on satellite. Good evening, Ray.
Yes, good evening, Don. I'd like to talk to Dr. Maccabee or ask him about two subjects. One, what does he know about MJ-12 or the Majestic program relating to UFOs? CIA project, that is. And also, he was talking about New Zealand, and he mentioned Australia, and I just heard recently that there was some sort of hidden secret base, a huge complex, some of it underground, I guess, in the center of Australia that is owned... Pine Gap, that's it. Do you know anything about that, or those two subjects?
First one was MJ-12?
Yeah.
The second one was Pine Gap.
Yes.
Of course, MJ-12, I guess I know more about the MJ-12 controversy than I know about the Pine Gap controversy. I don't I know I've heard of Pine Gap. It's a so ostensibly it's a part of the satellite tracking network, tracking things or satellites or whatever might be flying through the skies on ballistic orbits. That is missiles and things. I've heard rumors, like I guess lots of other people, that Pine Gap may be a headquarters for something related to UFOs. But I don't know of any. I don't know anybody who works there or has worked there, and I have no first-hand information on any of that stuff.
Is that an American-owned operation?
Maybe even UFO magazine has carried.
Say again, Bruce. Could you speak up?
Maybe even UFO magazine has carried some articles on that relate to Pine Gap in the past 10 years or so. But I think I read something about it somewhere. As far as MJ-12 is concerned, that of course is, in my mind, an open question. There are arguments against it and arguments for it, but I would say that assuming that the Roswell crash is real, which is a reasonable assumption based on all the testimony that we have, then there must be some hardware somewhere. And if there is hardware and perhaps bodies held somewhere in secret, then there must be some organization controlling it. And the job of that organization would be the job that has reportedly been assigned to this group called MJ-12. I would say that MJ-12, by any other name, is still MJ-12. There's some control group out there hanging on to the hardware, soaking up information from the outside and not letting any information get back out.
Well, Bruce, in that light, let me ask you this. Do you feel that the original MJ-12 documents that Bill Moore released publicly in late 1987 were legitimate? Or do you believe that that may have been someone's idea to get the crowd off the trail by spreading a little disinformational brown smelly stuff?
I'm certainly aware of all the aspects of the controversy, and I would say that it's still an open question. First of all, it's alleged in that paper you were discussing that Bill Moore faked documents, which I don't believe. But if they were faked, they were faked by somebody who was pretty damn clever, knew things about history that we didn't know about until investigations of the document began. You're talking about the so-called Eisenhower briefing document.
Yes.
Which was the first document to mention MJ-12, Operation Majestic, and it listed a bunch of people who were involved with it. There are arguments both for and against the reality of it, and our big problem, of course, is that there are people who wouldn't be convinced of any of that stuff until we can get a piece of the Roswell crash to sit on somebody's desk. I fall back again to my previous statement that if Roswell is true, there was some organization that had to do that job. It might not have been MJ-12. If the MJ-12 papers or the Eisenhower briefing document was generated in order to draw us off the trail, it caused us to waste a lot of time, but it didn't draw us off the trail.
What about
your contacts
that you met when you were giving your lectures at CIA? Did any of those people indicate that they may have any interest in this area whatsoever?
One of the things
in this letter, Bruce, in this AIR letter that suggested that the CIA officers, after they heard you speak, began snooping on each other and looking around for something with MJ-12 on it. Is that correct?
Well, essentially, that was what I was told. But this is not CIA officers necessarily. I never did finish my answer to the first question, and that plays right into the answer to that first question. I had been describing how I had gone to New Zealand, how I had been looking for technical help in evaluating the radar stuff on that, how a guy had connected me up with the CIA, quite to my surprise, how I had gone there and talked about him, New Zealand, and then been invited back for another general discussion. And this addresses directly one of the things in the paper. The second discussion I had at the CIA did mention a number of documents that might that the CIA might have had, and a comment came out that there might be thousands more, perhaps some number like 15,000 or some, make up a number. The guy who told me that knew well enough that he didn't know everything about what the CIA had. Now, it alleges in the AIR document there that I continued to have meetings with the CIA 1979 through 1983, which is false. After the 1979 meeting, I didn't have any further conversations or meetings at the CIA, had no further contact, period. I probably wouldn't have if it hadn't been for the fact that of some of the work that I do for the Navy became of interest to the CIA in 1984, at which point I was contacted again, this time by a totally different person, nobody I ever met before, and I went there and briefed him. This was a briefing on some work that I was doing for the Navy.
Okay, Bruce, we're going to have to take now our half-hour break. We're right at the half-hour. Time flies when you're having fun. Ray, I want to thank you for your call.
Okay, thank you. I wish you would be on TV soon.
Okay, well, we'll see what we can do.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, and when we come back, more with my guest, Dr. Bruce McAbee, and we're going to be taking some more phone calls. If you'd like to speak to Bruce, and you're in the 818-213 or 310 area codes, you can. More after this.
CRN, the Cable Radio Network, presents this program for its entertainment value only as a service to our listeners. CRN does not endorse or object to any topics or views discussed in the program.
You forgot my music there, Darren. I guess we'll have to get it next half hour. We've got Dr. Bruce McAbee on the line, and we're going to be taking a call from Fritz in Westlake. Good evening, Fritz.
Good evening, Don and Dr. McAbee.
Is this Fritz Krohn?
That's Fritz Krohn, that's right.
How you doing, Fritz?
Fine.
Long time no hear.
Unfortunately, I can't get you in. The cable doesn't carry you. Bird was so gently kind and called me and said that Dr. McAbee is on. Otherwise, I wouldn't know who he's on. Unfortunately,
okay.
I didn't get you. But I get a taste from Bird sooner or later. I want to ask him a question. As a scientist, I know he keeps distance when it comes to UFO contactees. I know that, especially when there's pictures involved. But I want to nail him in a way, Dr. McAbee, have you ever, I mean, truthfully, investigated the Billy Meyer photos? And what is your viewpoint? I know as a scientist, you have to be very cautious what you say, but have you analyzed scientifically the Billy Meyer photos?
The only thing that I've analyzed carefully, although I'm aware of what other people have done, I think the only thing that I've done myself was to analyze part of the film that Billy Meyer has showing an object swinging back and forth over the top of a pine tree.
Well, the tree is, the top of the tree is sort of moving when the wind moves it. Is this the sequence we're talking about, the backwash type,
yeah,
when UFO
appears,
flies around
it? I wrote an article about that, which appeared in IUR several years ago, under the title Pendulum from the Pleiades.
Well, I know, Dr. McAbee, that you have to be very cautious, and perhaps deep inside, the book isn't closed on the Billy Meyer case, but I guarantee you, the Billy Meyer case is not going away. It still stays as strong as ever. The film and the picture prove it by themselves, and perhaps sooner or later, perhaps, I would say, there's more photographic evidence coming that the Palladians are here. That's my opinion, that the films are real.
Okay, Fritz, I want to thank you for your call. The lines are lit up, and we've got to take some more. But hang in there, and hopefully you can get listening on a weekly basis.
Let me finish my answer first.
Pardon me?
Let me finish my answer first.
Well, we got to move along, Bruce. I've got a ton of calls here.
I'm going to stick my answer in somewhere.
Oh, well, stick it in then. Or are you talking about
the
Billy Meyer?
The answer to the first question.
Oh, okay.
The first question was that meetings have I had, or briefings have I had with the CIA? And so far I've gotten to the point where I said that I was there twice in 1979.
Right, and you had no further contact until 1984.
And then, unlike the hot air paper, I had, unlike what the hot air paper says, I didn't have any contact till 1984, at which point I was contacted again, related to my Navy work. I went there, gave a briefing. I didn't say a thing about UFOs, neither did the other guy that I was talking to. But he must have found out somehow, somebody there recognized...
Well, we're talking about the Directorate of Science and Technology, Ron Pandolfi, is that correct?
Yeah, one of the employees who works in that.
Pandolfi.
Right.
Okay.
And he was interested in some Navy work that I was doing because he was tracking what at that time was the Soviet version of it. And subsequently, somebody mentioned to him that I had been there previously. So he called me up and started asking me about this stuff that I had talked about back in 1979. And I would go over there occasionally in the following years to talk about this particular item of interest from the Navy work, and sometimes get into discussions of what was going on in the field of UFOs. In 1987, the MUFON Symposium was held in Washington, D.C.
Right.
And that created a lot of press interest, and there was the world's first abductee panel, and it was also the first time that the MJ-12 papers were discussed publicly.
Yes.
And apparently a lot of people over at the agency were interested in sort of a general discussion. So Ron asked me if he'd like to give a lecture over there, which I did one lunchtime sometime in the summer of 87.
About MJ-12?
To talk about the UFO subject and MJ-12. So what I did was I went there and shoved the CIA papers right back in their faces.
And how did they respond to it?
Well, apparently, there were secretaries there, could have been janitors, I don't know, anybody.
It was an open thing?
Open thing, right.
Okay.
And as have been some of the other lectures that I've given there. And afterwards, I was told what Ron said, well, I created a lot of spies in the agency.
Well, Bruce, as you no doubt know, and this has been in UFO research forever. I mean, going back literally to the very beginning, the modern age of UFOs, which today is considered to be 1947, that an intelligence taint, especially when it is covert, okay, this can do no one's career in UFO research any good. Did you realize how these things might look or would look? And did you assume that they would stay secret and no one would know about it? I mean, it was obvious that there were people in the Fund for UFO Research that knew about your periodic meetings with some of these folks and objected to it. But did you assume that this would not become an issue?
Well, I hadn't made it an issue. It still wouldn't be an issue if it hadn't been that Mr. Zeckel has a hidden agenda here, which people who don't know anything about him wouldn't be aware of. But
we're talking about W. Todd Zeckel, one of the primary authors of this document.
Yeah, right.
Many people may not know who he is.
Actually, it was, I realize now, quite a success. Our evidence of stature in the scientific field, the guys over there at the agency who are interested knew of my work in conventional science, and considered that highly enough so they'd be willing to listen to me talk about something that was totally unconventional. They're pretty skeptical about the whole subject.
Well, the agency has been known to be somewhat unconventional over the years. Bruce, we're going to have to take another phone call here. I'm going to go to Bill in Sherman Oaks on United Artists. Good evening, Bill.
Oh, yes. Hello?
You're on the air.
Yes. Bruce, have you ever had any verbal interaction with Jacques Vallée?
Jacques Vallée?
Yes.
verbal interaction.
Well,
do you mean a four-letter word for intercourse?
No, I didn't mean that, actually.
Certainly, I've talked to him in the past. I haven't really got any major correspondence with him. Vallée tends to keep himself out of the mainstream, and I've been working more in the mainstream of ufology.
I see. Have you had a chance to read any of his books?
Sure. I haven't even seen his most recent one to get a hold of. I read a little bit of Revelation. I read his his earliest books, I guess.
How do you feel? How do you feel about that book? If I could ask you,
what one?
The Revelations.
I didn't get all the way through it, so I really don't know. It gets a bit too dense.
Well, let me get to my question then. On page 18, it says, according to some government scientists, I'm quoting the book, like Dr. Bruce Maccabee, the higher echelons of the administration in Washington are so concerned about the potential menace posed by the aliens that they have designed a complex technology response, the so-called Star Wars system, not to aim its laser at particle beams at targets on Earth, as the public has been told, but to zap possible invaders from above, more or less, as he puts it, UFOs. How do you feel about that statement?
Read the last half of that again.
Pardon me?
Read the last half of it again, Bill.
The last half, I guess, would be that that they create a potential menace posed by the aliens that have been designed a complex technology response, the so-called Star Wars system, not to aim its lasers and its particle beams at targets on Earth, as the public has been told, but to zap possible invaders from above.
In other words, Bruce, what this is suggesting is that the various governments have gotten together and developed the Star Wars system to stop quote-unquote alien invaders with advanced weaponry. Your field is lasers and optics. Do you give any credence?
Furthermore, it appears to be attributing a statement like that to me, I guess.
Right.
Well, I never said to anybody, nor do I believe, that Star Wars was started in order to repel the invaders.
you never made that statement.
I don't know what exactly he thinks I said, but I've never said that. I might have speculated that maybe it might be considered a spinoff, but certainly all the information that I have ever had on Star Wars indicates that it was designed to shoot down ballistic missiles, and I've been to a number of Star Wars type briefings, and nobody's ever brought up visitors from outer space as being a target of Star Wars.
Do you have any idea where he may have got this information to put this in his book, or
is there any quotation or a notation there, Bill?
Well, it's not necessarily a quotation. It just says according to some government scientists.
Was there any note there though, where this may have the statement may have been made or
no,
the date?
No.
Well, you know, I've been trying to get Valet on the program for some time. I'm going to continue, and perhaps if I'm successful, we can ask him.
But, Bruce, you never made that statement. Is that correct?
I don't know what statement I might have made that he might have misconstrued, but I know of no evidence that Star Wars was started or that even anybody's considering of using the elements of Star Wars for shooting down aliens. The whole technology, all the parameters of the technology are designed for one thing, and that's shooting down ballistic missiles. Now, I wouldn't deny the possibility that once this whole system is up, if it ever were, it might have secondary uses. We already know that some people have suggested Star Wars technology might be needed in order to shoot down oncoming meteors, which is certainly not type of thing that was intended for initially, but whether I have never seen any paper nor had any discussions with people on the inside who argued that the UFO reality played any part in Star Wars.
All right.
Thank you.
Bill, thank you
thank
for
you.
Your call.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We're going to go to Suzanne in North Hills on CVI. Good evening, Suzanne.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm fine.
Thanks for talking to me tonight. I feel very thrilled. I'm all new to this.
okay.
And I've just been reading nonstop about everything I can. Apparently, I wondered if you had any updated information on the recent sightings in Ontario, Canada, where it was reported there was a flood of sightings going on in the past 2 weeks in Newmarket, Keswick, Bradford, and King City in Brighton. My sister lives in Bradford, and she relayed something a little eerie to my mom the night before anybody knew anything that it came out in the paper. said she had incision marks, and so did her husband, and she said she had a weird dream that she was questioned about factories, and she had stated she didn't want to know what they were going to do to her. She just wanted to get it over with, and she now is reluctant to talk about it, and she said it wasn't the first time. I wondered if you, at this point, I do know Victor Lorenko is investigating a woman in the Brighton area who has come forward with an abduction around the same night, if that's what it was. I wondered if you had any insight on the flood, how they described it was the
flood.
You
mean a flap of UFO sightings?
Well, to quote him, he said, this is what we call a flood. And he is the director of the Mutual UFO Network, a civilian-based nonprofit group in, I guess, Canada.
No, to be honest with you, in the last couple of weeks, Suzanne, I have received no information on that. That's something I certainly will look into this week. But the crux of tonight's program is with Dr. Bruce Maccabee, and I'm trying to keep the
right
show within those parameters.
I understand that, and I realize my call was probably minuscule compared to the deep stuff.
Well, no, I'm glad you mentioned that. I made a note here. I am going to check into that.
Great.
Somebody ought to be informed about, what was it, your sister?
Right.
Your sister's story.
Yes.
I haven't heard about a flap. I think the more typical word would be to call it a flap of sighting, a sudden increase in sighting rate. I would hope that there's more than just one MUFON investigator working on it up there.
Well, he was mentioned in the Toronto Star. That was the head investigator of that area at the time.
Yeah, and, well, there are presumably a number of other people who will be able to help in the investigation, too, if you really got a flap going.
Yeah.
I would presume that Walt Andrus would know something about it, the headquarters of MUFON in Texas. You know, that up in Canada has been the site of a number of places, and it was not far from Ottawa that the so-called Guardian case occurred, almost 2 years ago now, for the date, and that was featured on Unsolved Mysteries last February.
Yeah, Bruce, but that's not a very good case to bring up with all the attendant information that came along with that, including tales of Red Chinese nuclear, stealing nuclear bombs and putting them on UFOs. And I mean, that whole case was totally bizarre.
Well, even more bizarre, there were two witnesses to the events. I mean, people who are, as far as we can tell, not involved with the videotape.
Well, something that landed there, yes, of course. But what I'm talking about is with that tape came some of the most bizarre paranoid ramblings in the documents that that I've ever seen in my life. It sounded like something right out of somebody's nightmare.
Yeah. Well, whether the real question is whether or not there was an event. And it certainly seems that there was an event there, which involved something coming down, sitting on a field in the back of Diane Lebanek's field, witnessed by her and her next-door neighbor. And we've since located another witness who is north of the field who has another related, equally bizarre tale to tell. This other lady has passed a lie detector test on her story.
Did they claim that they saw a disc there?
Are you talking to me?
No,
Bruce.
Well, Diane, I don't think she would have called it a disc. Saw an object which, based on a reconstruction, was on the order 25 feet wide. With a flashing blue light on the top, a lot of light coming out of the bottom, and red lights off to one side that looked like contained fires, I guess you might say. She could see that the red light fire wasn't going anywhere. So she confirmed the major details of what's on that video. And her next door neighbor didn't actually see it on the ground because a line of trees blocked his view, but he did see this thing flying over. So he described it, I think, a golden colored bottom light, something that was bright, that would fly. It flew over, like over his house almost, and then dropped down behind trees. And he had his attention called to this event by the virtue of the fact that he was watching TV that night when all of a sudden he noticed there was a red glow coming through the window, and he walked outside thinking he was seeing red lightning. He couldn't think of any reason why there'd be red out there. He walked out to see the red, and that's when he saw this, what we call the disc, whatever, come over and then disappear below the tree line from his point of view.
Okay. Suzanne, we're going to have to move along. I want to thank you for your call. Please keep listening.
Yes, and I definitely will.
If you would like, why don't you call UFO Magazine later this week, and I might be able to get some information on that.
I definitely will. Thank you very much.
You bet.
Thank you, Bruce. Bye.
Okay, Bruce, we're going to have to take another break. We're a little over time for that anyway, and when we come back, we've got some more telephone calls. My name is Don Ecker. The show is UFOs Tonight. We are back with my guest, Dr. Bruce Maccabee, and we're going to take a call from Delta in San Diego.
Hello?
Yes, Delta.
Yes.
Are you getting us on cable or on satellite?
Cable, I believe. I'm on. I don't have a radio. I'm just calling from the telephone.
Okay. Did you have a question for my guest?
Yes, I got a question for Dr. Maccabee. The question is, the first question is, has the doctor ever reached any of these military institutes, which are ICS, S2, and CID? And the second question is, has he heard any references to hypnotic repression conducted on military personnel? And the third question is, what's the procedure in investigating more of this military operations? Right now, I'm investigating one area of military operations.
Oh, did you get all that, Bruce?
Well, it was military institutes of what were they again?
ICS.
What's that?
Information System Command, Pentagon.
What were the others?
S2. Intelligence. And CID.
Criminal Investigation Division. Right?
Counter.
Oh, counterintelligence? Okay. That would come under DIA, I think.
Okay. But I've heard
CID is a criminal is the criminal investigative division.
CID is.
Yeah.
Okay. That's what I've heard, and this is what I'm investigating, and also the company I was with. And I was asking question on whether the doctor knows any of any incident conducted as UFOs, and also if any other personnel have been
okay, Delta. Bruce, do you have any information on any of that?
No, I'm not connected with either of these things you're talking about. I'm not an intelligence, and this ICS or ISC, I'm not familiar with at all. There's certainly in the available records of the Air Force indications that Air Force intelligence organizations have been involved in collecting data, but I'm not absolutely sure what it is what your question is. I don't personally know people who are in intelligence organizations and have investigated UFOs for hypnotic regression of military people. I think Bud Hopkins is aware of one or two stories. Bud Hopkins, who's well known for his abduction investigation, is aware of a couple of cases of military people. And the last thing was procedure on military operations. I don't know what you're referring to here, procedure for doing what?
Delta?
Yes.
He's asking the procedure for doing what?
Hypnotic repressions.
Hypnotic regressions?
Repression. Repression. Not repression.
Oh, repression.
Repression to
suppress memories.
Yeah, to repress the memories on all personnel because they exposed to UFO. So, in turn, they send specialists to...
Delta, you and I have talked before, haven't we?
Yes.
You've called me at the office, haven't you?
Yes.
Okay.
Bruce,
what he's asking is, and we got to boil this thing down, Delta, because we got to get moving.
Right.
But he's asking if you have any information or any knowledge of military techniques in order to suppress someone's memory having viewed an event?
I don't have any knowledge about that.
Okay, I'm sure that we're talking about techniques that would involve either some type of narcotic or hypnosis. Is that correct, Delta?
Yes, that's okay. Correct.
All right. He doesn't have any information.
He doesn't have no information.
Not on that, no.
Oh,
Bud Hopkins might have a couple of have one. I'm aware of at least one case that Bud Hopkins has talked about a military guy who apparently may have had something like that done to him. But I'm pretty fuzzy on the details.
Oh, I am Delta. That's the one.
Yeah, this is the guy that Hopkins was working with, Bruce.
Okay. He came by on
guess
June 10th.
I was generally correct.
I'm sorry, Doctor. I'm the one. He came by June 10th.
Call yourself Delta?
Yes. I have to leave that code name right now because there's some things that's happening right now that I don't want to use my name.
I know this guy, Bruce.
Okay.
Well, yeah. Look, guys, we're at the top of the hour. We've got to take our top of the hour break here. When we come back, more of my guest with Dr. Bruce McAbee. Delta, I want to thank you for your call.
Thank you.
And stay in touch. You know how to get me at the office.
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you.
We'll be back after these words.
CRN, the cable radio network, presents this program for its entertainment value only as a service to our listeners.